Hi there. Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. Steve here. And since 1988, New Life has been transforming lives one life at a time. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's most hard, difficult places. One way we do this is through the live program that we share with our listeners here on this podcast. Now, you'll get to listen to callers bringing us their challenges, and our panel of counselors and psychologists provide insight, which you will learn from too. Let's go to today's podcast episode.
Hello, everybody. It's Becky Brown, and I am joined today by Dr. Sherry Keffer and Dr. Jackie Matt-Karras, and we are so grateful to be here to help you in so many ways. And, you know, it's Friday, which I lovingly call Fri-yay, because some days, some weeks, we need a Fri-yay. But, you know, I just was having a conversation with somebody earlier today about how hard it is for folks who are in recovery, and we could say how hard it is for most people to do self-care. And I think sometimes in addiction and recovery, it's because we've tried to numb ourselves in our addiction. So it makes sense. Like, why would I want to take care of myself when I'm trying to get out of myself? And recovery is all about integrating that. But, you know, here it is the weekend, whether you're in recovery or not. What are some ways that you would encourage, you, Jackie, you, Sherry, would encourage someone to do some self-care this weekend or some intentionality on a better part of their life?
One, I would say give themselves a permission slip to have some self-care. We're so busy. Our jobs require so much of us. Our families require so much of us. Recovery requires so much of us that we don't necessarily believe we can. We're thinking of all the things we should be doing while we're, you know, taking a bubble bath or going for a walk. And I think self-care looks different for everyone. I ask my clients to sit with what they've done throughout their life that brings them joy and sets them in a calm space and do more of that thing. When you mentioned people in recovery, I think one of the hard things about that is that part of being in recovery is to get out of the habit of doing this pleasure thing, this thing that makes you feel good. And then we say, get some self-care. Well, right. I'm being trained to not need this pleasure. So we have to change how we talk about recovery and how we talk about the changes that a person is making. There's some neurological changes, yes, but it's the pleasure wasn't the bad thing. The thing
that's really good
was the problem.
That's good. All right, Sherry, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I love your idea of the permission slip. Dr. Jackie, I, having grown up in a home where there was mental illness, severe mental illness, neglect, what happened is I grew up not being aware of my need for self-care. And when I would do things or watch people do things, I would feel guilty if I tried that. I felt selfish. And what I say, and this came out of my own journey, is self-care is not being selfish. It's not being selfless, which is where I was at. It's being self-carish, right? Self-carish. Mm-hmm. And so learning that taking care of myself is probably the most faithful thing I can do for me. It's fidelity. It's self-fidelity. So when I get caught up, when I turn off my phone, when I just look at the laundry clothes piled up high and I look at it and I go, I know I grew up with that chaos, but I'm going to take some time, put everything else aside and give myself the gift of organization in my closet instead of a mound of clothes there, you know. It helps. It feels like something inside of me gets reorganized and I have to not shame myself, be kind to myself because it's an area of continued growth. But isn't that what we're all doing? We're growing, learning to see ourselves and be faithful to ourselves and do what's right.
Yep.
I love that. And the permission slip is also to ask somebody, you know, want to go have fun? And maybe fold clothes together. I don't know. It could be the best thing you do this weekend. We'll be right back after this.
find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I hope that something you do this weekend will bring you joy. And one of the things that brings us joy is answering your calls. And we're going to go right to the calls, and we're going to talk with Wendy, who's calling us from Pensacola, Florida, listens on WEGS, and she's one of our Club New Life family members. Thank you so much, Wendy. How can we help you today?
Hello. So you guys already helped me. I was on the Zoom meeting last week. That was really good.
Nice.
And I've been praying about this, and it keeps coming back to you guys, so I'm going to put it on your shoulders. We had a visit over 4th of July. We live in Florida. Family's in Minnesota on my husband's side. And Grandma celebrated 80th birthday. We had two niece and nephew celebrating the birthday, so it was a happy time. But I also discovered something that I wasn't aware of. So our nephew, who's going to be 16 very shortly, getting to know him, and he and I have always had a pretty good relationship. I think I like try to be the fun aunt, but I'm also very serious about certain things. And when I started watching him, as I work with kids a lot and celebrate recovery, he drinks at 15, 16, vapes, but he also now was disclosed to me that he smokes marijuana.
Okay.
And so the reason Mom and Dad are totally 100% clueless about things. Their focus is on the older sister, who's the perfect child, does no wrong, and it's very tense being up there. And so timing-wise, given the fact we were up there for happy times and celebrating, I just did not seem like the time to disclose that. And it was initially disclosed to our daughter, who's in her early 20s, when he and she went to the movies, but it was something that was already on my radar just because of being able to play beer pong so well and his pretending to like smoke and show me some stuff. So what is my best approach to, because Mom and Dad are already so ridiculously, I mean, I so appreciate having parents who, you know, I'm kind of one of those parents, but I'm also reasonable, and their strictness and his, it drove him to be sneaky. It's drove him to not have, they're not open to conversing about stuff. It's my daughter, again, brought this up, and she brought this up when she was in her early teens. She's like, no, the conversations those guys have are just like, it would be like somebody you just met. Hey, how's the weather?
Okay.
And, you know, those kinds of things. So what do I do? I don't want to get him in trouble, but I don't want him to hurt himself and somebody else.
It's a great question. You're a great aunt for asking these questions. Jackie, let's start with you.
Yeah, you want to be the fun aunt, but also provide some safety and structure. And it sounds like part of the struggle is there's a question as to whether or not his parents are safe people for him to be in this process with, and it doesn't sound like you feel like that they are. Have you had a conversation with him? Is he aware that you're aware?
Well, I had this conversation with my daughter, and she was, and this is why I said, you know, I've got to talk to you guys, because she said, Mom, if you say something, and I could, of course, just say, but he'll know that I told him. And then that kind of closes down his conversations with her.
Right.
Right?
Yep. So then he has no one that he can talk to, so now we don't get any information.
Well, and then we can go to being more trouble and more sneaky, I just feel. I don't know what your history, because I'm not involved in the background with the kids that I help, between parents and stuff. I'm not there on a daily basis. And we, again, live in Florida. They're in Minnesota. Yeah. So
what would you to suggest for Wendy to do next steps?
I believe a conversation, like, we have to bring it out into the open. The healing's not going to happen if we don't start to address it. And maybe your daughter can have a conversation with him, letting him know that she wants to bring you in. But that someone has to know. I was in that situation as a youth pastor years ago. One young lady got pregnant and she told me, didn't tell her mom and didn't want to tell her mom. Well, sorry, we can't not tell your mom. So I gave her till midnight that day to tell her mom. And if she didn't feel like she could tell her on her own, I would be happy to come to the house and be supportive and be there with the two of them for that conversation. And that's what ended up happening. Then me and the mom got to do some processing and work through it. And there was support for both of them through the process. And so I believe that there needs to be a conversation. He needs to know someone knows, someone sees him, someone is aware that he's struggling and cares, and that there's help available
to
him.
That's the caring part.
Yeah.
Yeah, the caring part is just, like, seriously lacking on their side. I know parents have their good intentions, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, but the execution is so cold and so non-emotional relationship.
So, Wendy, let's hear from Sherry now.
Well, and I think you're feeling what he's feeling. The drug culture, and particularly teenagers when they are drinking together, smoking marijuana together, vaping, the struggle that they have at home, if we just look at what's happened relationally, is they feel like they don't belong. They're different. Or they're not good enough. But when they're with their friends and they're all drinking and using, guess where they instantly feel like they're good and they belong and they're wanted. And so that culture is part of what the draw is. Yes, the drug feels good, and I imagine this young boy is probably dealing with some level of anxiety. He might have general anxiety disorder. He might have anxiety because he's self-medicating with downers. Alcohol is a downer. Marijuana is a downer. These aren't stimulants. They're things that help a brain feel more relaxed. And so the tenseness that he's been living with, this is how he's trying to get a vacation from that temporarily. The sad thing is both with alcohol and with marijuana, I've been seeing more and more cases of marijuana-induced psychosis.
Especially now, in the teen years.
Yeah, I'm not wanting to scare you.
But what does that mean?
So what it is, is, you know, even though it's legalized now, used to not be, but now it is, I think in another years, who knows how many, they're going to pull back because there'll be too many car accidents, there's going to be too many hospitalizations, too many inpatient treatments, too many. Because the marijuana shuts down temporal lobes in the brain. It's a part of the brain that is responsible for emotional mood and also for being in reality. And so there might be slights or mild paranoia. The more they use it over the years, months, it shuts down their prefrontal cortex, which is the boss of their brain, and that part of their brain. And so I have parents, just had one recently call me, and I said, is your child using marijuana? Oh, no, our kid would never use marijuana. And I said, well, if you think there are signs that they're going into schizophrenia and they're in their teens, sometimes they'll think that they are schizophrenic, but it's marijuana-induced psychosis. The drug is what's making them go into an altered reality.
Right. So, well, Sherry, to that point is, if Wendy, if you know this about him, and God forbid something like this happens, and I don't know if it's your sister or your brother's child, you know, how is that going to feel for you on the other side of this?
That's exactly why I said I cannot sit by. And, I mean, this was, we just got home on the 5th, and unfortunately I've kind of had some stuff going on, but I said I cannot sit by and have something happen. And you guys so hit the nail on the head with how you described his not feeling like he fits in, out of his home, and I can see where his escape is.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you so much. That has been, can I rehear this to write notes?
Yes.
That's why we record these.
Yes. We're so glad you called.
When will we be new life?
You can, yes. And also on our YouTube channel, there's lots and podcasts. There's lots of different ways to listen to the program. And so it'll be there.
And you can even Google marijuana induced psychosis. You can Google that. It's a thing. There's stuff out there now on it.
Yeah. You can check at the newlife.com, and we have all of our shows there as well. But we're so glad you called, Wendy. We'll be praying for this situation. It's tough. It is tough. And but there's help available. Do you guys have a book suggestion that you would like to mention?
Oh boy.
I'm thinking How We Love Our Kids, only because eventually mom and dad are gonna need that information. Yeah. So that's what we're gonna
do. I love it,
you,
Becky.
And Wendy, what about understanding and listening to your child who smokes pot?
Well, there you go. And that one too. Two books. I'm doing a Steve on that one. Well, thank you so much. We're going to go back to the calls, and we're going to talk with Kathy, who's calling us from Philadelphia, listens on Sirius XM. Hello, Kathy. We're glad you called. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a New Life member for many years.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
My situation is I'm widowed for 8 years. I recently started a relationship that is very good, but just wondering your approach to handling things that go along with that at my age. 63, and basically the, you know, family dynamics and just approaching something at my age after so many years. I was married for 30 years.
It's a great, great question, Kathy. Sherry, let's start with you.
I just say walk. Don't run. Walk. Walk, walk. Take your time. It's probably been a while since you felt your heart flutter and all those, like, woo, what is this? It's been packaged up for a while. 63, I mean, my goodness, girl, I'm in my 60s. You got a lot of life yet. But let me ask you a question. Is he local or is he long distance?
Yes.
He's
local.
Okay. And just so I know, we're going to go to a break here real quick. What are your reservations? Like, I just, make us your girlfriends right now. Can you just, there's Becky, Jackie, and me. We want to be your girlfriends. What is the reservation that you're having? I can hear it in your voice, but we want to have something to chew on with you. What is that?
Well, I think I'm a different person than I was, you know, when I got married in my 20s. I wasn't as much of a Christian then as I am now.
So sex, you're wondering what to do with sex? Whether to have it or not?
Yes.
Okay, good. Look how honest we got. Girlfriend?
Yeah. I love that. All right, Kathy, hold on.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are talking with Kathy, who has re-entered the dating scene as a more mature woman. And so we're excited to hear about, you know, a new way of approaching relationships. Sherry, you want to continue in your conversation with Kathy?
Well, first off, Kathy, I love you. Do you know that? I just love that you just jumped in so we could just talk about what's real and what a very normal and common question that we ask when we're in the re-entering the dating world. And all I can do, I just want to give you a snippet and then I'm going to have Jackie share. But personally, when I re-entered the dating world, when, you know, I don't know if you remember, what, over a decade, 12 years ago now, when Steve had written the book, Is This the One? And Henry had the book, Finding a Date Worth Keeping. They challenged me on the program New Life to date a minimum of 20 men before I could land with anybody. But let me tell you what that did for me. I read their books, and I decided that I was going to start dating gentlemen. But I was honest with these gentlemen because I knew that I wanted to be valued for me. I knew that. I had come out of my relationship with Connor, who was a sex addict, and it was almost 17 years I was single again. And I thought, I want to be loved for my eyes, my conversations, my mind. Like, there's a lot of other body parts, girl, that we can be loved for. So what I did was really brave. I told them all that I wasn't going to have sex until I was married. Now, you should have seen the looks on their faces. Like, some of them said, well, you've been married already, haven't you? And I said, yes. And so why wouldn't you have sex now? I mean, I had some debate me. I had others go, But Kyle, my husband now, had similar values. But I wouldn't have known that if I'd given the milk away. I think a lot of times women give the milk away and they don't buy the cow. We want to be loved, and there's pressure and there's all these emotions and feelings. I know it's very titillating to be with a handsome man. It's like, woo! But I had to put handlebars around that part of me, and I, by declaring it to them, I found out two things. One, that there were men that weren't okay with that. And then I found out that there were men that were. And I wanted a man of integrity that would adore me. And you know what? I won the prize. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. I got an amazing husband who adores me today. And he waited with me. I'm not going to say it's easy because you feel, you know, in your 60s, we were in our 50s. But I think I got judgment from a lot of people. But I just had to. I had to pave my own trail. So I'm a girl that's out there, and I'll tell my story, just like Dr. Jackie talks about. Tell your story. Yeah. But that part of my story, I have no regret for, because I saw a man, like, be willing to wait and just fall in love
and
with
Sherry,
me.
Sherry, I would also like you to tell Kathy what you tell so many women about asking about pornography use, because that was another part of that process.
I did. And usually by date three, I wouldn't do it on the first date, but I'd tell my story, you know, about Connor. And usually if I was still interested and they were interested by date three, I would have a conversation about pornography. And I would just say, you know what? Yeah. I mean, I was in a marriage where this was a huge factor. And this is what I would say. I know too much now. I just know too much. And if pornography is something that you use on a regular basis, I'm not the right girl for you. I'm not going to be a good wife. I'm not going to be a good partner. It's just not going to work. And I had men.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I did that. I did ask.
Okay. And what did he say?
He said no.
Okay.
And I believe in.
Okay.
But no, I remember listening to you before and that, to ask that. And I, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
And when I heard no, then I asked a follow-up question. Well, have you ever looked at it? When was the last time you looked? Now, it goes a little deeper in the conversation, right? Because if they say I never looked at it, then I start to wonder if I'm really with a sociopath liar. Because I'm like, I don't know that there's a man on this planet that has not seen it. I'm not saying that they live on it. But it was nice for me to have somebody say, well, I looked at it when I was in my 20s, or I looked at it 10 years ago, but it's not my thing. I don't look at it now. I don't want to look at it. That's very different. That's more of a conversation to vet out. We had a caller here. You all remember. Oh, my goodness. It was probably a month ago. It broke my heart. It was a gentleman who lied to his wife, and her former husband was involved with some sexual, acting out. And he was hiding his porn addiction. And she found out like 10 years in, and she was devastated. And he was like, I was lying to her. I knew I was lying to her. It wasn't right. But he was trying to restore, which was good. But these are the conversations. We just have to be fearless in our 50s and 60s and even 40s and 30s or 20s.
Right.
We just have to be fearless today and not be afraid to just hear what's true and then get to make choices around it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, it's funny because it is a new relationship. It's new ground. There's fresh start, and it can be really good. And you're right, Kathy, you're not the same woman that you were in your 20s. And I'm going to see if Steve's book is still available. Is this the one? Because I think that would be helpful. Or we could send you Henry's book, How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. Either way, we're going to help you along that way. We'll be back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I want to just say thank you to all of you who support New Life Ministries. You are making a difference in the lives of so many people, whether it is a one-time donation, whether it is being part of our Club New Life family. And the Club New Life family gives each and every month a portion to the ministry. It just helps us do all kinds of help or offer all kinds of help to so many people. And I just wanted to say thank you. And of course, if you want to join Club New Life, you can do that by just calling us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can go to newlife.com. And we have a welcome gift of 8 of our 100-day devotionals. And so it's a gift that keeps on giving. So we just wanted to say thank you and just wanted to point that out, that you are making a difference when you give to New Life. And so thank you, thank you. We're going to go back to the calls, and we are going to speak with Elizabeth, who's calling us from Pensacola, Florida, listens on WEGS. Hello, Elizabeth. I'm glad you called. How can we help you today?
Hi, I didn't realize I was on coming on a phone call right now. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Well, you're here now, Elizabeth. How can we help you?
Okay, I apologize. I was on hold with the other lady, and I didn't even know that we were down talking. So,
You are.
I think what I need to ask, now I had a stroke in February, and I have you on speakerphone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so what I want to ask is I have an appointment tomorrow with one of your guys' Christian counselors. And my homework's supposed to be zone in on what it is exactly that I want her help with, because I can only afford like one or two appointments, and I'm trying to zone in on it. And I'm trying to zone in on it exactly, very, very targeted, because my money and my time and all that is a huge sacrifice. And I'm trying to zone in on exactly what I need her help with.
Okay. All right, Elizabeth. Well, you called the right place. Jackie, let's start. How can we help Elizabeth be prepared for her therapy appointment?
Well, first of all, Elizabeth, I think it's great that you're going and getting counseling. It is it is a sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice to help you be a better you. I think the answer is in you. You know what you need help with. You know your story. So maybe take some time today sitting with your story. Where did I come from? How did I arrive where I am right now? And then ask yourself, what am I feeling? Where do I feel that in my body? So that you can get familiar with your emotions and how they play out in your body. And ask yourself why. And then ask yourself, what do you need? And that's what you're going to talk about in therapy. You're going to talk about what you need. You're going to talk about your why. Why am I struggling? Why am I angry? Why am I addicted? Why am I depressed? What is your why? Where did that come from? And what do I need? I need to build some relationships, to repair a relationship, to get a new job, to find a new place to live, whatever it is. But ultimately, you're going to talk about your why and your what. Sherry?
Yeah. You know what's funny?
What?
Is I just did all that when I thought I was on hold with the other lady. I just made a whole timeline, and it actually, I was thinking how helpful it was to get organized with my thoughts. And I was sitting on hold. We went back and forth, and I thought she was trying to help me zone in on a question, and she was with other calls. So
I was
sitting there doing that while I was on hold.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And the thing that I would do is I would say, I want you to write down five things you struggle with the most.
Yes.
Your five top things. I mean, just having had a stroke, that has to play into some of the challenges. And so five, just have real clarity on those so that she can see what's going on. Now, do not leave your appointment without asking her about free services. Whatever your needs are, the five things, you ask her, do you know, because my funds are so limited, do you know any free services in our area that might help me? We have, in my area, we have a group called Spare Counseling, which they actually are a training center for interns and therapists. We have to get like 3,000 hours. And so they are able to have a sliding scale. Like, they can go down to $25 or $30 a session. Now, that can go a long ways. You might get five or six sessions. I have clients, I have folks that come to me, and I refer them there when they're really needing to go longer in treatment. And they come to me and just say, what can I do? And I'm like, okay, I've got the place. But we know who that is in our area.
Yeah.
You know, so ask her that. 12-step groups. What 12-step group would be the best for you, since that's free?
And she might have some space for pro bono where she would do some free work with someone, or her own sliding scale.
Yep.
So let her know that finances are a problem, and ask her if there, or she might offer scholarships. So ask the questions, because two sessions is better than no sessions, but it's going to be hard to get a lot of work done in two sessions. You build a relationship with the therapist, and then your work, the healing, is happening within that relationship. And in two sessions, you haven't really had a chance to do that, for them to get to know you, for you to get to know them, and you to find some ways that work after you set some goals. And so if you can get more sessions in, and maybe get yourself to a place where you're not looking at this as something that you're going to, you know, you're not going to like go into the dentist and get a crown, and then you're better. It's not going to work like this. This is going to be an ongoing process. So you might need a little more time.
Well, and along that line, Elizabeth, be encouraged that it's not going to be over in a couple of sessions, but that it isn't just because of your finances. But what we encourage people to do is continue to do the work, whatever that work may be. And it could be reading a book. It could be watching, you know, we've got YouTube videos on every subject, as well as old shows that are divided up by content, like the different topics that you could watch.
So true, Becky. And, so many people just heal by listening to listening to the shows and information.
Yes,
free. And free.
Yeah, and that is free. Yeah. And of course, group work. Yes, you sure can.
Okay, number one. I'm not bragging, but I've tried all that stuff you just said, and I do have good insurance, and my out-of-pocket maximum met. And the reason why I'm going through you guys is because I went through a lot of Christian counselors that actually hurt me a lot, that didn't deal with their own trauma and made it a lot worse for me.
Oh, okay, and so I have
access to all that, but I'm trying to get almost like, and I am zoning out on what I need. You know, basically what I think I need from her is to help me zone out on exactly, sorry, I got an alarm going off, is exactly what practical things I need to do right now, you know, almost like a crisis situation.
That's, yeah, that's, and that's,
and try again.
Well, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Elizabeth, there are different types of help that are available in different types of ways. And sometimes when we are in crisis, that is what we have to deal with, what is on fire right now. Mm-hmm. And then it is the continued work over our lifetime of reading and watching and doing all the things. And we're going to be praying for your this appointment. We're going to send you a copy of the Life Recovery Bible, and stay on, and Diane will get you some help with that. But we're so glad you called. We'll be praying for that next step. It does take a lot of work to do the work that we have to do. And it's not because you know, all of us are in a process, right? Or maybe we're not in a process. We're in a journey. And we just have to keep learning. And we also need to seek the Lord in these processes, right? And to hear what He has to offer us. Well, we're going to continue on with the calls. We're glad that you called, Elizabeth. We're going to go on to Sandra, who's calling us from Birmingham, Alabama, listens on the podcast. Hi, Sandra. Thanks for waiting. How can we help you today?
Thank you for taking my call. Now, it's a simple question, but it's very complex to me at the same time. I don't really understand what it means to be able to support and to be able to still hold on to your core values, and not do the things that don't align with your values. So it may be seen as not being supportive, but we feel like there are times when we just have to draw the line. I'm thinking specifically about a decision that our adult daughter has made, and we really don't think it's a good idea that it involves her child, and it's a lifestyle change for him. And so we're not supporting that idea, and so we did not want to give her a send-off.
Okay. All right, hold on. Hold on, Sandra. We'll be right back after this break.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are so glad you're with us. We are talking with Sandra. And before the break, Sandra, what we understood is that you have an adult daughter who's making some decisions that you're not quite comfortable with. Is that pretty accurate?
That's very accurate.
Sandra, you said she's moving far away. Why is she moving?
Well, that's a complex answer, to be honest with you. She did some DNA research, and found out that there was a lineage in this other country. And for the last 2 years, she's been talking about relocating to that country. Fast forward to 2 months ago, she went there. Like that, although my husband doesn't think she's really planned, and she's always made decisions on a whim like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is big because it does include a grandchild. And
does she have a job lined up over there?
No.
Okay. So how old is your daughter?
35.
Is she single or with a married or with a partner? Or?
She's single.
Single.
Mm-hmm. Does she have a career? Is she a professional? Is she struggling for work?
She had a career, and basically she said she was burned out after 12 years working for the company, and then she started her own company, and then that didn't fare out well. And the last couple of years, she honestly just seeming like outside of the pandemic just doesn't want to work. So she does these little odd jobs like Uber Eats and et cetera, et cetera. But
does she currently live with you all or on her own?
She lives on her own. Uh-huh.
Okay. What's the hardest part for you about her moving away?
How it's going to affect the child.
How is it going to affect the child?
And how old is their
the child?
She's seven.
How do you think will affect her?
He loves his mom very much. And he doesn't spend as much time with her because I'm not sure what happened, but he ended up most of the time with his dad now.
So is she planning on him going with her when she moves, or is staying with dad?
He's staying with dad. She's leaving him behind.
And where does dad live? Is he close to you?
Dad is local, correct.
Who's the man? Who's the man overseas that she's met?
We don't know. We can't get a lot of information. We've gotten some information, but not a lot.
Which is, what's that? What's the information?
She wants to go there to serve, is what she says. My husband and I are servers in our community. I think she's trying to patent that, but my husband and I have always told her that you can't support someone else until you can support yourself first.
What do you mean by serve? Serve in a...
Is she going on a mission field?
It's not a technical mission field. No, not at all. But in her mind, she's going to be serving, and it would be what we could consider mission work. But there's nothing playing out, to be honest with you.
No, I get it. And it makes you pause to wonder what's going on in your daughter that she would leave her 7-year-old son who loves her to go on a mission. Like, there's some red flags here. You know, I mean, if it was just about a daughter leaving and going on a life adventure, I mean, you know,
they
Dr.
moved.
Jackie, you...
I have adult children.
Yeah.
They've lived in Spain,
yeah.
Virginia. That's hard. But this sounds like something other than that. Like,
what happened? And we don't have a lot of time, but did anything... I want you to float back for a second. I want you to float back in your life and your history. What happened when your daughter was 7? Was there a change? Were you married someone else back then? Was there somebody at school that hurt her? What happened?
Well, I would tell you this, but it didn't happen at 7.
Okay.
She was adopted at 6 months.
Okay. That... Is
the country she going to, does she believe that that's her family of origin?
Yes.
So guess what she's doing? She's going on a personal pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a trauma response. Mm-hmm. She's not ever dealt with, and this is so common, Sandra, with children that are adopted. She was adopted at 6 months. And I know this is so hard to believe because we just remember what they look like at 6 months old. But what we forget is what we now know is that heartbeat of their mom changed. And most likely she had a handful of caretakers from the day she came out of that womb until the day she landed in your home. I don't know her story, but when adoptees don't do their own work from the trauma of being adopted, There's an grief attachment. And loss.
Yeah, it's an attachment injury. You've been separated from what you were built in and taken away from that. So she's trying to find her connection.
So how can we help Sandra connect with her in this decision making? Because Sandra, you're not going to be able to stop her from doing whatever she's going to do, but let's help Sandra keep a connection on some level.
Yeah. If you don't have a send off, and I don't mean a big party, but if you go all downer on her and you don't validate her journey and that she, because she's adopted, is looking for something right now. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, it's just a Debbie Downer for her to go. It's going to send her off negatively, which is what happened when she came into the world. I mean, she doesn't know her birth mom, but there's a lot of bad feelings of loss around that. So I want you to love her and get a lot of information on adoptees and trauma replications. I want you to wrap yourself like a blanket, like a warm blanket around your grandson, because he's going to need you. He's going to need your husband. He's going to need to feel like life is, that there's that energy around him.
And it could be helpful if you could maybe reframe your viewpoint. This is going to be a great time for him and his father. He has wonderful grandparents who love him. His mom can still FaceTime and connect with him. There are a lot of children out there whose parents don't live with them because they're deployed somewhere. And they maybe don't have a choice because their job has sent them away. And there are ways that we manage the life of the child that's to home with the stay-home parent so that they still have connection and relationships. So, yes, it will affect them. It will be a change. But we can teach them to be resilient, and they have the love and support of you all. You may also need to do some work to grieve that she even still needs this. Mm-hmm. Because she's 35, she's going to go, and she's going to try to figure out who she is and where she comes from. And you may be feeling like you're our daughter. And that's true, right? Yep. Definitely, understandably. But you can't understand the disconnect she must be feeling on the inside. Mm-hmm. And no one else can help her resolve that. She's got to go and figure it out.
Right. Sandra, we're so glad you called. We're going to be praying for this situation. We're going to send you a copy of How We Love, because I think that can help also just explore those connections. And, you know, it is tough when people make choices around us that we don't agree with, but the more we can love them and go to others with our grief and our concerns, it can help us in those times. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Sherry. And thank you, listeners, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.